This is the BBC Home Service from Scotland.
I was told you might have a car for hire.
What was that?
I said I heard you might have a car for hire.
Whereabouts is it you're making for, sir?
Ord.
Ord? That's a bit far away, even by the coast road. Near 20 miles.
But couldn't
if
you...
If you're to stay the night here, there's a bus for Ord in the morning. If you'd been a bit sooner, you could have gone with a post, but he's away by the looks of it. And there's no other bus but the morning one. It's only a wee place, Ord, you see.
Yes, but what about a car? Do you have one available?
Well, there's this one. My other's out on a job. But I dare say this might get us there. Might even get me back again if I'm lucky. But it'd cost about £3.
Seems reasonable enough. Can we get away at once?
Well, if you say so. I'll just put your cases in. Is this all you have?
Yes, for the moment.
You see, it's not the usual time of year for any... I mean, for a stranger to be making for like a board. You maybe have friends in the place. Say, like the minister there. It's none of my business anyway. That's, I should be fine now. Now, if you just get in, we'll,
Why the minister in particular?
Mr. Mackay. Well, if you're staying any while in Ord, you'll come across him. Not that it's any of my business, but I dare say he'll make sure you come across him.
We present The Devil's Minister by Alistair Mair. The Devil's Minister.
As always, looking back, I find it impossible to fix a single point, either in time or on the map of the world, as the precise beginning to this story. In a way, that first journey to Ord was the end of the beginning, the end of the first chapter, a chapter which had begun some time before, but which I was soon to discover had unbreakable connections with Ord, connections I could never have dreamed of then. The earlier memory, like this one, was of a strange man and an even stranger death. If in relating it now I seem to regard it somewhat impersonally, it's because it wasn't as complete in itself as I imagined at the time. I see it now almost as a warning. It was some 2 years before my journey to Ord. I was on shipboard bound for Africa, where I had a job of research to do. One of the other passengers kept very much to himself. His name was John Boyd. It wasn't until the last night of the voyage that we spoke to each other. Quite unexpectedly, he made a point of seeking me out, not only willing but anxious to talk.
What do you know about me?
Well, you've told me your name.
Well, you know a lot more than that, though, don't you?
I don't know anything about what you are, but I think I may know a bit about how you are.
Tell me.
Whatever it is, it seems to have happened only since we've come near Africa. At least, it's only since then that I've noticed it.
Noticed what exactly?
I don't know if I can be exact. It's a strange look in your eyes. Doesn't seem right in a face like yours.
Put it down to nerves.
I wouldn't say you'd be prone to nerves.
Yes, I suppose I should expect an anthropologist to use a more impressive word.
Say you know a bit about me.
Yes, I know a bit. More in terms of fact, probably, than you know about me. You did a lot of work on the Kasai about 10 years ago. Then the Spaniards put you in jug without a visa. You turn up in Kasakar a couple of years later after some cockeyed trip from the White Nile. When any sensible man would have flown.
I never claimed to be sensible.
Well, that's why I'm talking to you. Didn't you wonder why?
I suppose so. But even more, I've been wondering what has put the fear of something into you these last few days.
Something? That's good. I thought you were going to say the fear of death. But you're quite right, of course. It's not death. I'd like you to listen.
Yes?
And believe me if you can. It's not fear of death. It's fear of annihilation. Total destruction. Body and soul. Listen, I'm not a liar and I'm not mad. Do you accept that?
I accept the first. Not necessarily the second.
Well, you know a bit about witchcraft, don't you?
As much as anybody, I suppose, who isn't in the business.
And you know the Orangi are pretty good at it.
None better.
Well, the Orangi don't just talk about it. Things happen. And this time they're going to happen to me unless you can do something about it.
Me?
Yes. Mind you, without meaning to be insulting, you're a forlorn hope, but you're the only one I've got.
Well, you better tell me.
The Orangi are forest people, you know that. Well, the first time I went up there was just after the war, the first war. I was a young man. It was a survey job, and I stayed keen. There was a lot of talk about witchcraft and cannibalism and human sacrifice, but I didn't see any of it. When I went back, I was old. I could speak the language a bit, and I could understand the drums a little. Enough, anyway. And it wasn't just talk. And then I was over in Kenya for a bit during the war. When I went back to the Orangi country in 1946, I found a missionary fellow in their territory, a Scot. But I didn't like the setup any more than I ever had done before.
What do you mean?
I got the feeling there was something going on, but I couldn't put my finger on it exactly. This missionary did the usual stuff, held services, sang hymns. As usual, the Orangi boys went along for the laughs. But I found that the Reverend missionary was a great pal of the most senior and respected witch doctor, which was not quite usual. And there was mighty little evidence of Christianity around, apart from the Bible thumping.
You mean he was going native?
Oh, no, not as simple as that. He wore his dog collar, all right, shaved every day, kept up all the marks of civilization.
How long had he been there?
A couple of years or thereabouts. Long enough, by the way, to become a fully fledged member of the Leopard Society.
Well, that's surely not possible.
I went to search his hut one night, with no authority, of course. And I found the skin and the iron claws. When he came back, I was sitting in his chair with a gun on my knee, waiting for him. I draped the skin on the table and laid the claws on top. He didn't even flicker. Simply said, "My work here's finished." I walked out. But I didn't even get a chance to fire. When I got to the door, he'd vanished.
And what became of him?
No idea. I put my report into the DO, but they never traced him. And I got another bit of the story from a head boy. I may say not till after we were out of the district. The reverend gentleman and the old witch doctor had been working together for quite a while, concocting new magic, the boy said. And in particular, perfecting a technique for the transmutation of souls.
The what?
You heard. And incidentally, if I'm lucky, you're going to be able to observe the phenomenon at first hand. And perhaps very soon.
In spite of the normal ship noises, the night suddenly seemed incredibly silent. Silent and waiting. And full of something imminent beyond the silence. I felt this man's fear returning, intensifying. And I felt it communicating itself to me. Then something brushed my cheek. A moth, I thought. And I struck it down. Boyd stretched out his hand, picked it up from the deck, and passed it to me.
Do you know what this is?
It's not a moth.
Obviously.
It's a seed of some kind. A winged seed. I've no idea what species.
Well, how'd you think it got here?
On the wind, I suppose.
What, 20 miles from land? Maybe more than 20 miles, and with no wind worth speaking about.
What exactly are you getting at?
Just that I find two or three of these every day. They land on my lap, usually. It's the seed of the white-bark mahogany tree. The first seed came on the day we sighted Africa this trip. The day you first spotted, I was scared.
There must be some kind of rational explanation.
Well, then I'd be more than grateful if you could enlighten me.
Let's get back to your transmutation of souls.
The Orangi believe a tree has a soul.
Yeah, they're not the first people to believe that.
Well, the story I heard was that the white and the black witch doctors got the idea of trying to change the one into the other. And again, according to what I was told, they succeeded. The change takes place at the moment of a man's death. It's also the moment of a seed's germination. I didn't believe it. I don't think I do even yet.
Well?
But one day, I found what looked like a recently planted tree, very young. I dug it up. And I also dug up the body of a young boy. One of the roots had pierced his chest. He hadn't been buried all that long, but I couldn't find any obvious cause of death.
What has this to do with you?
A few months before I went on leave, I was up there again. There was trouble then. You know, the drums were going every night. But the real trouble came just before I left. A road was to be put through, and their sacred tree was slap in the line of it. But I wanted the road to go round it, but the engineers wouldn't listen. So the tree came down. It came down the day before I left. When I got back to my hut, my boys had gone. There was a seed, like that one there, lying on my bed. Around 11 o'clock, the old witch doctor came. He was quite simple. He simply said that he would need my soul to replace the one I'd destroyed, and that he'd get it before I landed in Africa again. I left for the coast in the morning.
Well, you're all right then, aren't you?
Well, how'd you make that out?
Because he told you. If he'd been sure he could kill you, he wouldn't have told you. He would simply have gone ahead and done it. Telling you means that he's depending on the fact that you expect it. He's counting on the fact that you'll kill yourself.
Oh, that's simple stuff. I know this man. He knows me. He knows I'm not the type.
So?
So, we dock in the morning. Rightly or wrongly, I don't think he can do it unless I'm alone or asleep or both. And that's why I want you to stay awake and talk to me, to be my shadow right up to the moment when we go ashore. He said, before I landed, if I get ashore alive, I'm all right.
We sat in my cabin. Strangely enough, the conversation was quite lively. We found that we had quite a number of interests in common, and even that we had one or two mutual friends. I remember looking at my watch at 2:30 and thinking how remarkably awake I felt, and again, strangely, how much I was enjoying the conversation. I have no idea what happened then. I seem to recall a sense of rapidly approaching darkness. When I regained consciousness, I was in exactly the same position that I'd been in before, sitting upright on my pillow with my back in the corner of the bunk. The time was 6 o'clock. Boyd was dead. He was in the position he had been when we were talking, but his head had fallen back. Only one thing was new. Resting on the skin in the open neck of his shirt was a winged seed. From it rose a slim stem some 6 inches long, bearing 2 young leaves. A little white root curved upwards from the seed's split shell. And where it pierced his skin, it was surrounded by a drop of uncoagulated blood. About all this, I offer no explanation. I merely record what happened. And I do so because of the connection between that death and the other story I feel compelled to tell. The reason for my going to the Highland village of Ord was part decision, part accident. I never had a permanent home. My parents had died while I was at university. Then I went from there into the army. And since the war, I'd spent nearly all of my time overseas on various projects of anthropological research. But now, for the first time, I wanted to find a home. The easy explanation was that I had a book to write about my research work. But I also had a deeper feeling than ever before of wanting to settle down.
You're looking for what, Mr. Collins?
Well, I've described it as well as I can. Not a cottage, not a castle. Somewhere northwest on the coast. I suppose near a village. But the quieter the better.
You have a job. Sporting estate, yes. We cottages for weekends and holidays, yes.
Now, I know all about that,
yes,
but
I couldn't sell you Glenavok Lodge, I don't suppose. 38 rooms and the usual offices.
No, thank you.
No, I didn't think so. I dare say the roof will have to morph in too, like all the rest. I'll keep your requirements in mind, of course, but it might take a while.
Well, would it be worth taking a trip further north? Inverness, perhaps?
Oh, if you've time, why not? I doubt if you'll find a firm with the place of your kind of their books, but you never know. Or you'll maybe hear of something some other way to keep your ears open.
Yes. Running well up to time? Grand countryside.
Oh, yes, sir, it is, yes.
Oh, not reading, are you?
No, I've finished a chapter.
Yes, marvellous countryside. Well, the sea, for one thing, and the hills. The storms you get on the coast can be pretty fantastic. But there's something else, I don't know. There's a sense of age and mystery somehow. You probably think I'm talking nonsense.
Oh, no, not at all. I agree with you.
Memories of the Picts and all that. Mind you, I'm a physicist, not a poet. But I can still talk about mystery, though. Well, look, you know a bit about radiation. Well, 100 years ago, no one knew anything about it. Nonsense, they'd have said. But it happened. Well, if that can happen, invisible rays and such like, then there's no saying what else can. Well, we have to accept the possibilities at any rate.
Naturally, I shan't quibble with that.
You've been to Cape Mist?
No, not so far north. Talking of mysteries, there's telepathy, for instance. I mean, a man could be made to act in a certain fashion without knowing why. He simply receives a message and acts on it without understanding it.
Hmm? Well, that's magic.
Well, it's magic to you. Nuclear physics is magic to me. It all depends what you mean by magic.
Yes, I suppose it does. We're almost at Inverness.
Oh.
You staying there?
Overnight, possibly.
Oh, here then. I'll help you down with your case.
Oh, thanks.
You got a hotel?
No, I...
Well, try the Regal.
Good, is it?
Yes, pretty small, but they do quite a good breakfast.
You do quite a good breakfast here, eh?
That's the biggest one I've had for years.
All right. Not like some places I have to go to, I'm telling you. Oh, McCallum's the name, Willa McCallum.
You're, on the move all the time.
Selling. Home just at the weekend.
Mm-hmm. Glasgow?
Yes. You know, that big place the visitors go through on the road to Loch Lomond. You've just been visiting yourself.
Well, it depends.
But you're English, aren't you?
I am not. Scots born, Scots parents. Well, we all went south when I was, I think, just 2 or 3.
Oh, well, that's fair enough. I mean, you can't help it then, can you?
What?
Your English twang.
Oh. I've a notion to come home now and settle down.
Oh, good for you.
I've some work to do that I can do anywhere, and I thought this was as good a place as any.
Better. The best. Any place in particular you have a notion for?
Oh, West Coast. Somewhat quiet.
Oh? That's funny. You know, I was just here. Do you know a wee place by the name of Ord? No, I don't suppose you would. See, there's a map on the wall here. I'll show you. It's here, just at the mouth of this sea loch. I have a cousin there yet, Jean. Mackenzie's her married name, but she's a widow now. She keeps the shop in Ord. Oh, it's a grand wee place, and it so happens that... Are you interested? I mean, would it suit you?
Well, I don't quite know yet what you're talking about, do I?
Oh, that's true. I'm getting carried away a bit, but... I was just wondering if old McQueen's house would be too big for you.
Well, I still wouldn't know, would I?
McQueen was a lawyer in Glasgow, but like my father, he came from Ord originally. He retired and went back up there when his wife died. Now, Maggie, a cousin of Jean, you know, Mrs. Mackenzie, Maggie was old McQueen's housekeeper. But the old man took a shock at the new year, and he's in a nursing home here in Inverness. I doubt he'll never get back to Ord, poor man. But... I wonder, is the house too big for you?
How big is it?
Well, I suppose there'll be 3 rooms anyway, down the stair, and maybe 4 bedrooms up the stair. Quite a big house, but...
Well, it sounds as if it might be all right. Is it for sale?
Oh, it'll not be for sale. But if you were to ask about it, they might sell it.
I don't quite understand the distinction.
You wait till you've been living in Ord a few years. You'll know the kind of thing I mean.
Do you think this house is worth going to look at?
Well, I think if you want it, you could get it. Maggie's got the keys.
Mm. How do I get there?
Good for you. Man after my own heart. Now, see and not offer more than about 1,500. And you could well look worse than take Maggie on as a housekeeper. She's a grand cook. And tell Jean I'll be looking in when I'm round that way in May. Ah, now, mind now, not more than about 1,500. There was a wee touch of dry rot in the place a few years back. It's all right now, but you never know. Oh, and before I go, I'll show you on the map how to get there.
About another couple of miles. I was thinking, do you have anybody to stay with for the night?
Oh, no, I've never been here before, but I'll surely manage at this time of year to find a room at the hotel.
There's no hotel.
Well, surely there must be something.
Well, a few of the folk take visitors in the summer, but I doubt they'll not be looking for anybody just now. I should have told you before, but I was thinking you must know somebody in the place.
Well, is there nowhere at all you can think of? Well, if there isn't, I'll just have to come back with you.
Still, that would be an awful waste of a journey. All right enough. They would maybe take you in at the lodge, although by rights they don't open till Easter. That's the place they call the guest house. In the old days, it used to be a shooting lodge. Then a man called Cameron bought it.
Oh, is it in the village?
Well, about a mile out, up the back road. But near enough.
I told you, Collins, we're not open for business yet, but we couldn't turn you away. Not an old Africa man, aren't we? In any case, we've all got to know each other already, and our door is never shut to a friend. You're welcome to stay as our guest for as long as you like. Oh, you'll forgive my making a speech about it.
Excuse me, darling. Will you have some more coffee, Mr. Collins?
Ah, thank you.
Yes, Collins, you're a very welcome guest.
Well, it's very good of you, but...
No buts. You've no idea some of the characters we have to put up with during the time of year when we are at business.
As you gather, Mr. Collins, Hugh is now riding a favorite hobby horse.
What made you think of Ord as a place to live?
Wouldn't you find it very quiet?
No, I don't think so.
I hope you won't think that we are prying, but are you married, Mr. Collins?
No, I was for a couple of years just after the war.
Wouldn't you be lonely in Ord?
Yes, why pick on a place like this, huh?
Well, I wouldn't want to settle down in a place much bigger than this. I prefer the idea of life in a more, shall we say, intimate community.
It may surprise you if you do come to live here to find how intimate it is. Believe me, everybody knows everybody else's business. For instance, I would make a guess and say that you'll be going to look at old Mr. McQueen's house.
Yes, quite correct.
You see what I mean?
Yes, but I don't mind at all.
Have you any connections in the district?
No, except that my parents brought me here for summer holidays for a couple of years when I was a boy. I can only say I felt it might be a good idea to come back, that's all.
Yes, I know. That's exactly the same reason why we came here.
Well, mind you, it's first-class country, good shooting, fishing's even better. But I must say, some of the local people are a bit strange.
Oh, dear, and they're not really. They're just a little wary about strangers.
Well, Collins, you know, I've been here nearly 10 years, and they still treat me as if I were a foreigner or something.
Darling.
Well, of course, I was very nice, very warm-mannered, all that sort of thing, but it's difficult to feel any sense of real contact with them.
Well, don't let him put you off.
Oh, no, good heavens, no, wouldn't want to do that. And I assure you, we'd be extremely glad to have you here in the district. There aren't so many people of, well, people of one's own type, if you know what I mean. People one can talk to. There's, there's Morrison, the doctor, lives on the other side of the village. He's quite sound. And there's an excellent chap called Jimerson, writes about fishing and, nature, that sort of thing, you know. Very well-educated fellow. That's about the lot.
Somebody mentioned a minister to me. What about him?
Good God, no. He's a dreadful creature.
Well, he's very strict, certainly.
Strict? Oh, preaches nothing but hellfire and brimstone. Well, I went along once. Sermon lasted an hour and a half, and nothing but hellfire all the time. Dreadful business. And, you know, the even more dreadful thing is the man has power. We'll all get scared of him.
It's his daughter I'm really sorry for, I must say. She's such a nice girl.
Oh, if she'd any gut, she'd go away.
Darling, it's impossible for her to go away. Her mother's dead, and there's no one else to run the manse.
Oh, why can't he get a housekeeper?
You know very well that on his stipend, he couldn't possibly afford it.
His stipend's more than he's worth. I still say she should get out. Damned unhealthy business for a young girl like her, cooped up the way she is.
It would break her father's heart. He's terribly fond of her.
Oh, strange kind of fondness. And I don't believe he's got a heart.
Well, I must admit I don't go to church very often, so I'm not likely to see much of him, which from what you say is probably just as well.
Oh, believe me, you'll see him all the same. You'll make quite sure of that.
From the Camerons' house, it was a walk downwards towards the village. A village of grey and white houses scattered along a little bay, perhaps half a mile in from the sea entrance of the loch. Next morning, there was smoke arising from the morning fires and bending away in the wind, and the smell of the peat in the air came to me, mingling with the sea smell and the aromatic odour of the moor. I stopped for a moment, because I realised suddenly that this was what had eluded me in memory. This blending of sweet and pungent odours, such as I remembered from wonderful, timeless boyhood holidays. It came to me then, and I can't express this in any other way. It came to me quite simply that I was home.
Did you say, sir, that it was William McCallum told you to come? How did you come across him?
I met him in Inverness. Had breakfast with him, in fact. And by the way, he told me to let you know that he'd be looking in to see you around about the middle of May. He can't manage to be up this way before then.
I don't know why he couldn't take a run out this time if he was as near as Inverness.
Well, he seemed to be a very busy man.
Willie? Well, he was never busy in his life, riding round the country in his motor car. Still, he's a decent wee man, and I dare say I don't know anything about it. What it's like to be a man of business like him.
He was telling me about Mr. McQueen.
Oh, the poor soul. It sounds as if there's to be no betterness for him. He was a fine old man. No trouble at all, as Maggie's always said. It's a shame, right enough.
Willie was saying it might be a question of the house for sale.
They never job selling a place the like of that. There aren't many folk who'd want a house that size in a place like this.
I was wondering about it myself, as if you hadn't guessed.
Well, I dare say Maggie will be quite glad to show you round, if that's the way of it. Well, there's maybe one or two corners you haven't seen, but that's most of it.
It's a great credit to you, the way you've kept it up.
Well, of course, I was always hoping he'd be back, but it's not to be, seemingly. And it's a shame about the garden, too. There wasn't much I could do about it.
Well, it could soon be put in order again.
It was always a good garden.
You'll be out of a job if Mr. McQueen doesn't come home yet.
Right enough, they're not easy to come by, but... I could be giving Jean a hand in the shop. It would be something.
If the house is for sale...
I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Well, I'd like to buy it. And I'd like to ask you to stay on as housekeeper.
Oh, but... would you not be wanting somebody younger?
No, I'm asking you. And not just out of politeness.
Well, there's no sense in me saying it wouldn't suit me, Mr. Collins, for it would. I'd be thankful for the job, and... Well, I would hope you wouldn't be sorry for asking me.
I've no fear of that. And let's both hope the sale of the house will be as easy to settle as our bargain.
A client that's worried about how little he's to pay for a house. McQueen's lawyers are perfectly happy about the offer I made in your name. It's accepted as fair to both sides.
Well, it just seems so ridiculously low.
I've no doubt the same house here in Edinburgh will be worth 4 or 5 times more, or in London 10 or 12 times more. But where it is, if you don't buy it in a couple of years, it might be worth nothing at all. So content yourself. Now, when are you planning to settle in?
Well, late summer, I suppose. As soon as I can make arrangements about furniture, decoration and such like. In fact, as far as I'm concerned, the sooner the better.
Good day, Mr. Collins.
Oh, hello there.
Is a neighbor welcome to say hello?
Yes, surely.
Jemison. I know your name, of course, because the place has been buzzing with rumors about you for months. I have contained myself for a week to give you time to settle in, but I couldn't stand it anymore.
Well, I'd have been glad to see you any time.
Oh, mind you, everybody else's curiosity about you is just as lively as mine, but mine's uninhibited and unashamed. You have a job on your hands here, haven't you?
Well, the garden. Yes, it'll take some time, but...
Don't just chop everything down, by the way. There's some quite choice stuff in among those weeds.
Oh, yes, of course. You know about these things, don't you?
Do I?
Yes, all my neighbours have a label in my mind before I've seen them, from what I've heard. Your label is naturalist.
Oh, interested, but inexpert. Except perhaps about certain species of bird life. And about brown trout. Do you know, my old headmaster told me once a long time ago, the chances of your ever learning anything about anything are infinitesimal. Well, I'd like to be able to go to him now and tell him how much I've learned about brown trout. But he's 95, and he's not very clear now either about who I am or what a brown trout is, so it's not much consolation. How's Maggie looking after you?
Oh, she's a marvel.
Ah, she is, and more. If ever there was a good wife wasted.
Yes, I must say I wondered why.
Oh, usual reason.
Well, you mean a shortage of men?
No, I suppose you could say the wrong man. She had a baby a long time ago. The father was a fisherman from Loch Boisel, but they never got married. The son's a fine young man now. Lives with Jean McKenzie. Or at least he used to till last year. Last year there was a devil of a row he was mixed up in. No fault of his, I may say. But he was supposed to be friendly with the daughter of the manse.
Sheila.
Have you met her?
No, but I know all the names. Was she friendly with this boy?
Oh, I don't think there was very much in it. But there was too much for her father's liking, old Mackay. You haven't met him yet either, have you?
No, and from what I've heard, I'm quite willing to delay the meeting indefinitely.
Well, he went for that boy with all the holy terror he could summon up. Threatened him with whatever the Presbyterian equivalent is of bell, book, and candle. Believe me, that up there at the manse is a really choice example of possession and oppression.
So you're not one of the minister's admirers, then?
Have you met anybody here who is?
I haven't heard Maggie say anything against him.
Have you ever heard Maggie say anything against anybody?
No, that's true.
Besides, he's probably put the fear of... No, whatever it is, it's not the fear of God. The fear of himself into Maggie. It works very powerfully, even in a good soul like her.
One strange thing I have noticed, nearly every conversation I've heard here sooner or later got around to mentioning this man. He's very much of a presence, even in my life. And I haven't even set eyes on him yet.
I shouldn't think that could be delayed much longer. But if you need an ally, remember I'm on call.
You don't mean that as flippantly as it sounds, do you?
Probably not.
But for all that, when it did happen, not long afterwards, my first meeting with Mackay was nothing very memorable. After all the introductory hints and forebodings, it seemed at first an anticlimax. I suppose I'd expected a kind of 20th century John Knox. Somebody long, lean, ascetic, with fire in his eyes. The real man was quite unexpectedly more like an Anglican bishop than a Highland minister. He was smooth, bland, and well-fed looking. His hair was smoothly brushed back silver. There was about him an air of prosperity, almost of affluence, quite untypical of his kind. His features were softened in what I suppose was, by his own standards, an attempt at friendliness.
I have naturally been looking forward to meeting our newest resident. You seem to have settled in very comfortably. Indeed, I suppose you must be a man of comfortable means.
Sufficient to let me do the work which I most want to do.
May I ask what is the nature of your work?
I'd be surprised if you weren't already fairly well informed about that.
I have it in my mind that it could be anthropology, although no one else here has specifically mentioned the word.
Well, that may be because of all the people here, only you and I, and perhaps Mr. Jemison, have anything like a specific idea of what it means.
What would be your idea of a definition?
The study of my fellow man in relation to the societies, groups, clubs, fraternities, or if you like, tribes, within which he behaves and identifies himself. It's not an easy kind of work to define.
Obviously, a mighty labor.
Yes, but inexhaustibly fascinating.
What is the importance of religion in your studies?
So great as to be constant, inescapable.
Yes. I notice that many of your books are concerned with the study of religion.
Of course.
But I notice also that you don't practice it. I have not seen you in my church, not even yesterday, the day when, as you must have known, you could have received Holy Communion. May I ask why?
For one thing, because nominally, I'm an Episcopalian. I could even say that your orders are not really regarded by my church as valid. I refuse to believe that I'm damned simply by my unwillingness to go to, say, your church, or that if I did go to it, I'd be in some way automatically sanctified.
Your arguments are hardly original.
I'm not arguing, and I'm not claiming that what I say is original.
It is my duty to tell you that I believe you are jeopardizing your immortal soul. And I must ask you not to discuss religion with any members of my church.
You what?
I'm sure you heard quite clearly what I said.
I find it difficult to believe I could hear such a thing from a civilized, educated man.
However, since you're a guest under my roof, I'm struggling for an answer which won't offend you.
Ian doesn't like Mackay, of course, but he says I'm obsessional about him. Well, if I am, I'm not ashamed of it. I think, or at least I feel, he's an evil man. Not just bad, but evil. In the way the Bible means evil. It sickens me and frightens me when I think of Sheila living with him.
Do you see much of her?
Yes, probably more than anybody else does. He, oh, no doubt, very reluctantly, but he does allow her to come here occasionally.
Has she got over the trouble about the boy?
Oh, you heard about that. Yes, I think so. Although she never says very much. She's very loyal to her father. There's no love, I don't think. But she is loyal and dutiful. I wonder what'll happen when she does really find her own man.
Well, she has a right to leave when the time comes. Her father couldn't do anything.
I hope it'll be as easy as that. But I don't believe it will. In fact, I know there's danger ahead for her.
I don't quite understand.
I don't claim to understand myself, Hugh. But I've a strong radar system about this kind of thing. That man is evil. And his daughter will somehow have to be rescued from him.
My next encounter with Mackay was, however, entirely conventional. He had invited me and the Camerons to dinner one evening. The doctor was there, too, but he spoke hardly a word all evening. It was a cold and lifeless occasion in every way. I longed for a couple of bottles of Burgundy to bring life into the drab room. But I did meet Sheila for the first time. After the meal and on impulse, I slipped through to the kitchen to help her with the coffee. When I returned to the drawing room, Mackay was warming himself at the fire. He looked up sharply.
Ah, Collins, we missed you. Where have you been?
Upstairs, powdering my nose.
Who gave you permission to go upstairs?
I wasn't aware that a guest had to seek his host's permission to seek out the bathroom.
I apologize. I am unaccustomed to playing host on such a day with two services. I trust you will forgive me.
Of course.
And you accept my apology?
Of course I do. The thing's over.
Excuse me, Father. Coffee, Ian?
Oh, thank you, Sheila.
I was telling Sheila what a wonderful library Mr. Collins has.
Yes, Father. I wondered if I might borrow some books from you, Mr. Collins. It's quiet here in the winter and I love reading. Would you mind?
Absolutely. Come over any time. Take what you want. If I'm not there, well, never mind. Maggie will be.
It's very kind of you.
I shall rely on you, of course, not to permit anything I might consider unsuitable.
Oh, but how's he to know? I mean, is there a codex in your church?
Lovely coffee, Sheila.
Thank you.
Your daughter is an excellent cook.
And I?
You, I find difficult.
I might say the same of you. You are a disturbing influence in our peaceful village.
Then regard me as a challenge, or a cross to be borne. In any case, we must learn to live with each other. No good can come of quarreling, neither to you, nor to me. Sheila did indeed come to borrow books, and from then on she became a fairly regular visitor. I used to wonder if she was choosing days when her father was away, but she never spoke of him. In the early spring, I had another long-term visitor, my young cousin Bill from London. Bill's a medical student, a good deal younger than myself. His mother married pretty late in life. We'd always got on well together. He was a very keen fisherman, and during his visit, he was off almost every day trying the streams for trout. But one afternoon when I returned from a walk, I was surprised to hear his voice coming from my study. I thought at first it was Maggie he was with. But when I opened the door, I found someone else with him.
She was about to run away, Hugh, but I persuaded her to stay.
I should think so.
I must go now, though. I didn't mean to stay so long.
Nonsense. I'm sure Hugh's going to invite you to tea.
Of course. Couldn't you stay for once, Sheila?
No, I really have quite a lot to do at home.
What? What have you to do that can't wait?
Well, my father, he's rather particular about regular hours. He'll be expecting tea.
Let him have it, then, at precisely the regular hour. Only today, let him make it himself.
No.
I'll go and tell him.
Oh, no, you mustn't.
Bill, it's not so easy.
I would like to, but I mustn't. I can't, really.
Oh, well, I'm sure Hugh will invite you back very soon, then.
Sheila knows there's an open invitation any time.
Tomorrow, and arrange to stay for tea, all right?
Well, not tomorrow, but perhaps later in the week, if
what?
Bill.
I'd like to come if I can. Thank you. Thank you again, Hugh. Goodbye.
Well?
Well, what?
Why didn't you tell me? And don't say tell me what, because you know very well what I mean. Listen, why all the mystery?
Well, even the little I knew of it then was difficult to explain rationally to Bill. But he wasn't very much concerned in any case. He was much more interested in the practical question of how to make sure of seeing Sheila again before the end of his visit. Strangely enough, I'm not sure whether they did meet again at that time or not. Sheila wasn't able to come to the house, but they may have seen each other before Bill went back south. I don't know. Bill didn't say much about it. In fact, it wasn't until about a week after he left that I was made to think of it again.
I'll come straight to the point, Mr. Collins. You had a young man staying with you recently?
My cousin, yes.
He appears to have met my daughter.
Yes, he did. She came to return some books of mine, and it so happens Bill wasn't fishing that day. If you're interested to be told why he wasn't fishing, it was because the sun was too bright.
It may interest you to know that my daughter has received a letter from him. I do not approve of this clandestine meeting, but I approve even less of correspondence arising from it.
There was nothing clandestine about it. I know, because I was there too. Didn't Sheila tell you?
I haven't discussed it with her.
So you open her letters?
I have her interests to protect. Bear in mind, she has no mother.
Obviously, it's my duty to tell Bill that his letter was never received.
It was received by me. And it will be received by Sheila in due course, along with my views on the matter. You might care to read it.
No, thank you.
Then I'll tell you. He says he is returning in the summer and looks forward to renewing her acquaintance.
Doesn't sound like a very passionate declaration.
They will not meet in the summer.
What are you going to do with her? Clap her in arms?
You choose to be facetious.
I must admit, I do think it's very funny.
You seem to miss the point, Collins. I have been tolerant of you for long enough, but I absolutely forbid you to permit this man to have anything further to do with my daughter. And I shall hold you responsible.
For what? For a friendship which maybe doesn't yet really exist between two adults? What a dirty-minded man you are.
I'm warning you. If anything comes of this, you'll regret it.
Please don't threaten me. I might be tempted to take steps to protect myself.
You're threatening me?
Precisely what I say. And don't take it out on Sheila. Don't, for example, try to forbid her coming here, as she has been doing. Oh, Maggie, would you be kind enough to show Mr. Mackay out? All this was completely instinctive bluff on my part. What I said surprised me almost as much as it did him. But it did work. That was the strange thing. The idea had come into my head that this man didn't treat me as he did others. That he was, for some reason, a little afraid of me. And when I had suggested that he must feel insecure, he'd reacted. But why this insecurity? And how could it be connected with my presence? And now the notion had taken hold of me that he actually considered me as potentially dangerous to him. If Sheila had been forbidden by him to visit my house, I don't think she would have come again. But on the following Thursday, which was her likeliest day for getting away, she did come.
Hugh, when did Bill leave?
The beginning of last week, as he planned. He said something about possibly writing to you, did he?
No, I haven't heard.
That's strange. He seemed quite definite about it. Or perhaps his letter got lost in the post. Of course, he may have forgotten.
He must have. Hugh?
Yes?
Could you ask him not to write?
Of course, if you say so. But why?
It's just, well, Father's rather strange about that kind of thing.
On that understatement, and because she looked and sounded so wistfully lonely, I didn't comment. Nor did I give her message to Bill. If I had, I would also have had to explain the reasons for it. I didn't see Mackay again for quite some time after that. Indeed, I'd half forgotten the questions and mysteries which he stirred up in my mind when, about the end of May, the story took a quite different and unexpected turn.
Mr. Collins, I was wondering... I can't help but ask you.
Could you manage without me for a week or two? It's Jean. She's been taken very badly, and I'm anxious about her.
Well, yes, of course, Maggie. What's wrong?
Well, that's the thing. I'm not just sure. If it was only what the doctor says...
What does he say?
Well, at the beginning, he said it was her heart. She was to rest, he said, for a week or two and take her medicine.
Doesn't sound too alarming.
No, it wasn't.
You think she's definitely worse?
Well, it's not only that. It's... Well, there's something got into her. She just lies as if she was waiting for an end.
Is there something you're not telling me?
Well, I don't know how to say it, and that's the truth.
When did the doctor last see her?
Today.
What did he say?
Well, I couldn't really get anything out of him at all. And I was wondering... Oh, I know I shouldn't be asking you, and you've only to say no, but... Well, I was wondering if you could maybe have a word with the doctor. Oh, but don't, please don't tell him that I asked you. Oh, I wouldn't put such a thing on you, but I'm frightened we'll lose her.
I gave her the diagnosis and prescribed treatment.
And you said that after rest and treatment, she'd be all right.
That's correct.
Maggie thinks she's worse. What do you think?
She is worse.
What would you say is going to happen?
I can tell you what's going to happen. She's going to die.
How do you know that this is going to happen?
Call it experience, if you like. And I'll tell you something else which may surprise you. I'm quite sure Maggie also knows that her cousin is going to die.
Did you tell her?
No.
Then how could she know?
I suggest you ask her.
What happened to make you change your mind about this patient?
Medically speaking, nothing.
Have you thought about taking a second opinion?
It could be arranged, but it wouldn't make any difference.
Well, don't you think it's your job to arrange such a thing? And to get your patient into hospital if need be, or get a specialist to see her? I'll pay the bills, if that's what's worrying you.
I'm not a bad doctor, Collins, although I say it myself. You can get the College of Physicians out if you like, but she'll still die. Because she expects to die.
She what?
You heard what I said. Her fibrillation is controlled, her fluid output is up, her lung bases have cleared... But she'll die.
All right, I accept what you say. And I'm inclined to think I may owe you an apology. But perhaps I know now what to do about this.
In return for the apology... No, listen, you mustn't think me flippant about this, but... A word of advice. Leave it alone.
Maggie, will you tell me what happened on Monday night? The night Jean got worse.
There was nothing... There was nothing out of the way happened.
Maggie, for all our sakes, you must tell me. If you want to help Jean, you must tell me.
It was only that... The minister came.
Were you there, Maggie?
No.
You didn't hear what he said to her?
No.
But you know, don't you, what he put into our mind?
I think so, but... How would anybody believe it? Is there... Is there anything you could do for her?
It's yourself, Mr. Collins.
Yes, Jean. I've been to see the doctor.
Yes.
He says you're going to get well again.
He knows better than that. At first he maybe believed it, but not now. The minister says...
Oh.
He says there's going to be no betterment for me.
Listen, Jean. You must listen. The minister's wrong. He's made a mistake.
He's never wrong. Everybody knows. He's never wrong when he says nobody's going to die.
This time, Jean, he is wrong. And if you'll listen, I'm going to tell you why. You don't know much about me, do you?
They say you're a clever man. Always at the books.
That's right, Jean, I am. And I'm so clever that I'm going to make you live. Feel my hand. Squeeze it. The harder you squeeze, the more power I have to make you well. The more power I have to make you live. You're not going to die. I'm a clever enough man to know that you're not going to die. Nobody dies until their time comes. I know that your time hasn't come. It hasn't, I know. It won't come for a long while yet. So you can't die. The minister doesn't know. I'm cleverer than he is. I know.
The angel of death walks at his side. Everybody knows that.
Not in this house, Jean. Death has no power to come to this house. I'm telling you that. You must trust me. You must believe me.
right enough. They say you're a clever man.
You can't give up, Jane. Don't give up. You're not going to die. You're not going to die.
And so, repetitively, endlessly, through the long twilight, feeling my own foolishness, I went on, driven by the feeling that it was somehow necessary to force this one fact into the poor woman's brain, deliberately building up crazy fantasies about my own power in the feeble hope that superstition in her own mind would do the rest, that she would be forced by her own superstition to live, just as previously her belief in Mackay's power had been forcing her towards death. After a long time, her eyes closed, and I fancied I saw a new composure in her features. Afterwards, the consuming weariness of mind and body almost overcame me. I managed to get home and found some refuge in sleep. But it was a sleep filled with nightmares, and soon interrupted.
Collins, come on, wake up.
What are you doing here?
You must wake up. What did you do to Jean McKenzie last night?
Jean, how is she?
Tell me what you did to her.
I did nothing.
You went to see her, didn't you?
Yes.
Damn it, man, don't play with me. I'm her doctor, after all. What did you do?
I talked to her.
What did you say?
How is she?
She's better.
Thank God.
What did you say to her? How did you do it?
I'm sorry, I'm not telling you. If that sounds insulting, I'm sorry again, but I'm still not telling you because I'm not convinced of your discretion.
What do you mean?
I mean that you might tell someone else.
How much do you know?
I can't tell you that either.
If she's still alive, and I can see she is going to live, he'll...
Let's give him his name. You mean Mackay, don't you?
What am I going to tell him?
How do you come to be under his influence?
It's not as simple as that. It's just that he seems to know.
Do you think it is only that?
What am I going to tell him?
Tell him the truth.
I don't know what the truth is.
Tell him then that I am responsible. Tell him I have my methods just as he has his. Make that quite clear to him.
But
and listen, Morrison. Please understand this has happened for the last time.
Am I welcome?
Yes, of course, Jamison. Come in.
You'll not be having many visitors these days. That's the trouble about having supernatural powers. It makes ordinary mortals shy of you.
What do you mean?
You know very well what I mean. You can't go about laying on hands and raising the dead without the word going round. And, of course, these stories tend to grow. You've got quite a tally of small miracles to your credit now, you know. So, what are you going to do about it?
For a start, I'm going to try to stop you talking nonsense.
No, but seriously, Hugh.
Morrison asked me the same question, but I don't know the answer.
Listen, Hugh, none of this is news to me. I've known a bit about it for a long time. So, in a way, has everybody else in this parish.
Tell me what is known.
People become ill. They're expected to get better. Mackay visits them, tells them their time has come, offers up a pious prayer or two, and departs. Within a couple of weeks, there's another funeral, and that's that. Oh, in a way, it doesn't add up to very much. Just the odd fact that Mackay is so often right, and the doctor so often wrong. Yeah, but there's still a great deal of it which is unknown to as far as I'm concerned. For instance, how is it done?
Well, that strikes me as being the easiest part of it.
Oh?
You've got superstitious people, or if you like, imaginative, sensitive people with a long tradition of belief in, let's say, pagan things. Things with their roots away back before Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
Beliefs that still survive, even if only unconsciously. Look, people live their lives on two levels. The ordinary, everyday life we know, and a deeper inner life, which is seldom mentioned.
Yes, I can see that.
Well, if you take a man like Mackay, with his physical appearance and personality, and if you give that sort of power, and then put him in a position to exercise it over people like these, well, you make it very easy for him. People are already convinced of his spiritual, even when they're well. If they're ill and thinking about the possibility of death, it wouldn't take much in the way of suggestion, like almost a kind of hypnosis, to push him over. Just an idea. The one thing I'm sure about is that somehow he removes the will to live.
Why do you think he does this?
Have you any ideas about motive?
There's no motive. That makes him mad.
Well, I think there is a motive, a definable one. In fact, I'm surprised you haven't thought about it, because it's very much in your line of study.
What do you mean?
I mean, sacrifice. Oh, I know, it's not the sort of thing that bears thinking about. I don't suppose you've ever seen this before.
What do you mean? It's a book about this kind of religion we've been trying to define.
Have a look at the title and the author.
30 Years in the African Mission Field by Matthew Mackay.
That was my clue. Didn't you know he'd been in Africa?
No, but it makes sense of a few mysteries, doesn't it?
Mind you, I wouldn't put much money on his having been a missionary for 30 years, or even being a real missionary at all. But from what I've found out, he did definitely spend some time in Africa. And, by the way, one of the things that explains is his reason for being scared of you, the African expert. Oh, all right, don't be modest. Maybe you're not an expert, but the point is, he thinks you are. And in any case, you could be a man from his missing years. You could have crossed his tracks at one time or another. You might know something about him. And now you've shown your hand, he knows you're against him. And he knows that you know that Jean was intended to die. I hope you realize the implications of all that.
I suppose there are really only two possible consequences.
Exactly. Either he does nothing more, now or ever again in this place. Or he gets rid of you.
Hugh, can you tell me, is your cousin coming back?
He's due to arrive next week, for a longer visit this time.
I wondered.
Sheila, do you remember I asked you once if you'd had a letter from Bill? I must tell you now I deceived you about that.
How?
Bill did write to you. Your father opened the letter. He brought it to me, wanted me to read it. He told me he was going to show it to you. He must have changed his mind.
Bill thinks I've got the letter, then?
Presumably.
I wonder if Bill would be frightened of my father.
He frightens you very much, doesn't he?
Yes. He's just a man, I suppose, but...
Sheila, what do you mean by that?
I don't know exactly. Do you know that he hates you?
Yes, I do.
Are you frightened?
If I am, I don't intend that you should know it, or that I'll give in to it.
That means as much as not being frightened. You've no idea how important this is to me. To know that there's someone in my life who won't give in to him.
Margaret Cameron says you would never leave your father.
I've only met Bill 2 or 3 times. But I think I have a right to get to know him better, if that's what he wants too. I think if my father stopped me from doing that, I would leave him. He's spoiled so much, I don't think I'd ever forgive him if he spoiled this.
You'll certainly try to.
Then I'll have to deceive him. Will you give me Bill's address? I'd like to write and thank him for his letter. I won't tell him that I haven't read it, but I'd like to say I'm looking forward to seeing him again. Do you think that's silly?
No, I think it's very sensible.
Oh, I'd better go, Hugh. Oh, but I'll take a book with me as usual, or he'll wonder what I've been doing. This time I probably won't read it, so anyone will do. Can I take this?
Well, as a matter of fact, I...
Hugh! Where did you get this book?
You mean you've never seen it before?
No. I didn't know that he ever... Is it yours?
No, I didn't know about it until the other day. I got a copy from...
Hugh, do you know that this book, if it is by my father...
Well, there's no doubt about that.
Do you know, then, that it's a lie? He couldn't possibly have been a missionary for 30 years.
Now, listen, Sheila, this is not very important so far as your life is concerned.
But look...
It's not a very good book in any case. But perhaps he realized that, but perhaps that's why he didn't say anything about it to you. Forget about it.
But why, Hugh... There's so much I don't understand.
You won't learn the answers by asking your father at the moment. You might know them one day if you wait. Now you better go, Sheila. You'll be late.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Hugh. I'll write to Bill tonight.
When Bill came, I didn't try to involve myself at all in their plans for seeing each other. But I presumed that they met as often as they could. Besides myself and Maggie... I think there was at that time only one other person in the place who knew about what was going on. And she was very much on their side. Margaret Cameron.
Hugh, a quick word, but it's very important.
This is all very mysterious. Would you like a sherry or something?
No, Hugh, I can't stay. It's about Bill and Sheila.
I mean, it's a ridiculous situation, isn't it? It's bad for them, Hugh, all this subterfuge and deception. They deserve something better than that, surely.
Yes, of course, but what can we possibly do about it?
Well, listen, this is why I wanted to see you. I think I can persuade her father to let her come to Edinburgh with me for a week to the festival. If I emphasize the mind improvement angle, I don't see how he can reasonably object.
Except that he's not a reasonable man.
I'm going to try to persuade him anyway. And I have a feeling I can.
Well, then, what am I supposed to do about it?
Nothing. Except approve of it.
Well, I do, undoubtedly.
And, of course, tell Bill.
So he doesn't know about it yet?
He doesn't, but Sheila does. And this means a lot to her. I'm terribly fond of her, Hugh. And she deserves our help.
What about her father?
Well, if he does come around asking, you've got to persuade him that Bill's still here. I'm sure that kind of ingenuity should come easily to you.
Well, I suppose it's possible, but certainly not easy.
Well, what do you say, then?
I haven't a hope of getting away with saying no, have I?
No, you haven't. But I'm glad you have the sense to realize it so quickly. I would have told Bill about it myself, but I honestly didn't know how to without letting Sheila down somehow. You will be tactful about it, won't you?
Sorry if I'm a bit tongue-tied tonight.
No, I hadn't noticed. I have my problems, too.
I didn't say I had a problem.
You mean you haven't?
Well, as a matter of fact, I have. Though I wasn't meaning to unload it on you. Still, I might as well tell you now. She didn't turn up tonight.
She didn't turn up where?
We'd arranged to meet up the hill there.
Presumably, she couldn't come.
Why not?
Well, hasn't she told you about her father?
Not much. Except, of course, that he'll raise merry hell if I show myself around the manse. You didn't put it like that, of course. Just that father's difficult. Father's got a thing about young men, and she has to be back by 5 o'clock at the latest to make father's tea. And there's not a hope in hell of getting her out again because father doesn't approve. I'm pretty sick and tired of hearing about father.
Listen, Bill, it's maybe about time you were doing some thinking. Does it never strike you that she's got to live with him? Does it never strike you that every time she meets you, she runs the risk of a blazing family row? If she didn't turn up on this occasion, you can take it from me, it's not her fault.
All right, then. So it's time I was going to do something about it.
Going where, exactly?
Where do you think? To see father, of course, and tell him a few home truths.
If you do go down there, Sheila's the one who'll suffer most.
How do you mean?
Can you tell me? I'm sorry to put it quite so bluntly, but what is the position between you and Sheila? To be completely blunt, are you thinking of marrying her?
Well, that's my business, isn't it?
Well, of course it's your business, but unfortunately, the way things are, it happens to be other people's business as well. So, are you?
I haven't decided.
That's fair enough. But anyway, do I take it that you haven't decided not?
Correct. I haven't decided not. I hope you agree. It's fair to say we don't know each other well enough yet.
Yes, but the trouble is, it's going to take you a long time at the present rate to get to know each other at all.
That is a logical, if slightly pedestrian, summary of the situation.
And don't be flippant. I'm doing my best. This isn't easy, you know.
Better than you, I know.
Well, then, I...
Hugh, what is all this about? It just occurs to me that I'm being rushed.
Margaret Cameron is trying to arrange to take Sheila to Edinburgh for a week. And the idea is that...
You mean I'm invited?
Yes. To leave discreetly and travel separately. As far as anyone else is concerned, you'll still be here. My job is to cover up for you. Now listen, I take it you want to go.
Why are you so concerned?
Because we think the two of you deserve it.
I don't suppose I have to answer your question, but I do very much want to go.
Right. Now we'll need to think carefully about the strategy of this. Make sure your fishing tackle is left in the right parts of the house at the right time, mm-hmm. and that most of your luggage and clothes are still visible, in case friend Mackay comes calling.
There's just one thing. It's going to shake me a bit if she looks me over and doesn't fancy what she sees.
You're still busy, Mr. Collins. Don't you find your visitor any obstacle to your work?
Not at all. He's as obsessional about his fishing as I am about my work. What can I do for you?
Well, I called to see you.
Yes, so I gather.
My daughter is away, you possibly know.
I did hear, yes.
I'm not accustomed to being alone. It is perhaps a weakness in me that I don't like being alone.
Now, Mr. Mackay, I don't wish to seem inhospitable, but as you can see, I'm busy.
Too busy even to entertain a visitor for an hour?
I hope I shall always be too busy to entertain you. I'm sure I have no need to tell you why.
I'm not so sure about that. There could be several reasons why you do not wish me in your house at this time. When does your cousin usually return? Shouldn't it be about now?
Do you wish to see him?
Yes, I do. Very much.
It's a pity you didn't call the other night. I had to restrain him from going to see you. He'd heard a little about how you treat your daughter. Shall I ask him to call on you tonight?
Is that intended as a threat of violence?
The only violence I could approve of for you would be hanging. After a proper trial, of course.
Collins, I intend to kill you.
I warned you before not to threaten me. Forget yourself. You would be more stupid than I think you are to attempt any such thing. You haven't even served an adequate apprenticeship. 10 or 12 years. It's nothing. Then you write this ridiculous book, 30 years in the mission field. It wasn't the mission field, of course. You know that. And it was certainly not 30 years. It's terribly indiscreet to put that sort of thing into print, you know. However, that's by the way. You should stop this talk of killing. There are many worse things than death. You've probably heard of some of them. I've no particular desire to make you experience others, but on the other hand, I've certainly no wish to involve Sheila in the kind of disagreeable publicity which may arise around your name. That's why I shall handle this personally, if any handling is needed. It's entirely up to you.
Who are you?
I'm the one man you have to fear. Now get out. But don't forget that.
I have to kill you. Before the year end, I have to kill you.
When was the visit from the Reverend Father?
Thursday afternoon, I think it was. He was suspicious, of course, but he didn't find out anything, I'm sure.
Sheila's been in a state about it all week, of course, but, well, it didn't spoil everything. Is she home?
I don't know.
She should have got here last night. Margaret fixed for Ian to pick both of them up at Inverness. I must say Margaret's been marvellous.
You had a good week?
Yes. Apart from a surfeit of chamber music, we had a wonderful week.
So?
So what?
Well, I haven't been sitting here shortening my life with strain just to let you court yourself on chamber music. Just tell me, what's happening?
The answer's yes, Hugh.
All right, my boy. No speeches, but if you're sure, you'll know how much it means to me.
Yes, we're sure.
I wish you well.
Thanks, Hugh, and that's for everything.
When?
Not decided yet. Next summer, I suppose, after I graduate.
Well, there is the problem of what happens in the meantime.
I'm getting a bit tired of this mystery, I must say. This mysterious heavy depression all around. Has it all to do with her father?
Yes, it has, but
I'm going to see him in the morning. I was hoping to go tonight if I'd got back a little earlier, but I suppose midnight isn't the most tactful time for a first call on one's prospective father-in-law, even if you're a lot more approachable than this one seems to be.
Bill, it's not funny.
No, I know that. But on the other hand, what's the point of exaggerating? In the end, there's nothing he can do to keep us away from each other. Can I pinch a cigarette?
Miss Sheila, sir.
Where?
She came to the back door. She didn't want to bother you, but she's been hurt.
Where is she?
It's all right.
Sheila, what's wrong?
I'm here. Oh, I'm glad you weren't in bed.
Well, what happened?
Oh, I've cut my foot a bit, but it's all right.
Hugh, where's your first aid stuff?
I think Maggie's already gone to get it.
Are you sure there's nothing else besides this foot?
No, that's all, I think, and it's all right.
Let me decide that.
Are you comfortable?
Yes. If you'll just give me a minute to get used to being here.
Sheila, before we say anything else, I'm glad about what's happened. He's a very lucky man.
Oh, we're both lucky for what you've done.
Now, is this all you need? There are more bandages.
Thanks,
if you
Maggie.
Want...
I think everything's here.
Right.
Sheila, hold Hugh's hand for a minute. This won't really hurt, but just hold on.
Tell us what happened, but remember, none of this matters nearly as much as what happened last week. And this, the kind of thing that happened to you tonight, it's all over now.
Yes, I believe that.
You told him?
Yes, tonight. I couldn't not tell him.
And?
Oh, I suppose it was predictable. He shut me up in the attic. He took my clothes away. Oh, there's a bed in the attic. He told me that was the place for wicked children. I found these old clothes in a cupboard, but there weren't any shoes.
Cry out loud.
I told you, didn't I, Hugh, that I wasn't going to allow him to spoil this. I was quite calm, but quite determined, for the very first time in my life, I suppose. I waited for a bit, planning what to do. Then when I thought he was in bed, I climbed out of the skylight window. Oh, then I had to jump, and that's when I cut my foot.
He did this because you told him you were going to marry me.
I'll leave it, Bill, for the moment. The best thing for both of you is to have a good night's sleep and get away first thing in the morning. I'll arrange it for the end tonight.
Yes, we'll go. But before I go, I have a score to settle here.
I take it you mean with me.
No.
I'm very happy to give you the opportunity.
He can't harm you, Sheila. Remember that.
Yes.
I promise you, he can't harm you. I thought I made it clear that you are not welcome in this house.
Yes.
But like fire and pestilence, I'm not easy to put out. We understand each other, Collins, I think. My quarrel at present is not with you. I have merely come to take my daughter home. Come, girl.
No, sir, don't you believe...
Would you dare to touch me with your unclean hands? Libertine, fornicator, defiler of purity. Stand back before the wrath of God strikes you where you stand.
Oh, man.
Maggie, take Sheila and fix up with some clothes.
You, away with me,
you look at his eyes. He is mad. His eyes...
Don't look at his eyes. And don't move. Stay where you are. Let me get between you. Sheila, you're going to Maggie now and phone her immediately. Tell him what's happening. Bill, did you hear me?
You see, Collins, you're wasting your time. I have him.
Bill, look away from his eyes. Look at me. Now look at me. Yes, this way. Now don't look at him again. This is the man I've told you about. He's dangerous. He's a very great danger to you. Do what I say. You know now who I am, don't you?
Yes. Yes, I know. You. What happened?
Don't look at him.
Must have hypnotized me.
Yes, and be careful it doesn't happen again.
It will happen again. The only thing not yet certain is when.
Bill, you go to Sheila now. Stay with her until Ian comes.
It was something I had to do, but I can't remember.
You will later. There's plenty of time. Do as I say. Go and find her.
Can't understand what happened.
The young man is a very easy subject. Astonishing how often that is so with such people. Their very vitality would seem to be a kind of weakness. I should have no trouble with him at all.
You won't see him again. They'll be gone in a few minutes. And until they have, you'll stay with me.
Indeed. And if I wish to leave?
I'll stop you. For the moment, not with anything more subtle than brute force, but I'll stop you.
And my daughter?
Obviously, she's going too.
May I ask where?
No.
You realize, of course, that this marriage will never take place. If you think you're winning, you're very much mistaken. I shall deal with that young man at my leisure.
I should advise you not to.
And with you, too.
That would be even sillier.
I'm not sure yet, but I believe I'm changing my mind about you. I think you're bluffing.
It would be very perilous for you to try to call it.
I wonder.
Try it, if you must. But first commend your soul to God.
My soul is already disposed of. Yours, too, if all you have said to me is true.
My soul is my God's. I'm not afraid for it. And any power I have is his, not mine.
White.
Yes. If you are black, then I am white.
Nevertheless, I am not afraid of you. And we haven't come to the end of what is between us. But the end, I warn you, is not far away.
Listen, you, I won't waste time on chat. I've been doing a lot of hard thinking about this. By the way, have you heard from them? Have they got away all right?
Yes, they arrived at Bill's mother's place just outside London last night. I spoke to them on the phone. I put through another call for tonight, so we should hear from them again in time now. Now, tell me, what's on your mind?
Just two things. One, his threat to kill you. Two, his assertion that there'll be no marriage. These are the two things on which he's promised you action.
All right. Let's take the wedding first. Have you any ideas about exactly what he'll try to do?
I should think that the object of his attentions is likely to be the prospective bridegroom. I mean, he's not likely to want to harm his daughter, I shouldn't think.
Well, about this man, I've got beyond the stage of trying to calculate what he'll do. In any case, as I told you, I was in touch with him last night.
Oh, how were they?
Well, Bill's still feeling a bit groggy. They seem to think he's got a dose of flu or something.
But you think nothing to worry about?
Well, I must admit, I'm beginning to wonder.
You know where Mackay is?
Well, presumably in the manse with his tongue in his cheek writing his Sunday sermon.
The point is that he's not. And I've heard a story about a car hired from Inverness last night. Not that there's anything you or I can do about that. Whatever is going to happen, if anything is, it'll have happened by now.
Oh, excuse me. Hello?
Your call to London, sir.
Oh, yes, thank you. Hello?
Hello?
Oh, hello, Cynthia.
Oh, hello, is that you, Hugh?
Yes. Listen, how is everybody?
They're settling down very well. It's all been a bit of a rush, of course. We don't quite know where we are yet, but I'm sure it'll all work out very well. She's really charming, Hugh. I mean, the way she lets it show.
Listen, tell me, how's Bill? What did the doctor say?
I think he's a bit puzzled. He mumbled something about a virus. But I took that as a way of saying he couldn't put a name to it. It is a bit mysterious. And of course it couldn't have happened at a worse time. Still, I expect to get over it quite soon.
Yes, I hope so. Is Sir Sheila in the house?
Yes, of course.
Could you come to the phone for a moment?
Here she is.
What's happened?
Just a minute.
Hugh?
Oh, hello, Sheila. Why? Is there something wrong?
No, it's just nice to hear your voice.
How's Bill?
Well, I'm not sure.
Well, he's no better.
No. I suppose it's just a funny kind of flu, but it's as if he's lost interest in everything. Oh, I don't know. Probably I'm just over-anxious. But he really doesn't seem like himself at all.
Listen, Sheila, find out the name of one of the doctors at his teaching hospital who knows him. One of the consultants, and make sure he's examined right away. And tell Cynthia I'm coming down to see him. If they'll take him into hospital, so much the better. I'll phone as soon as I get to London to find out exactly where he is.
Right you are then, Hugh.
I'm going to get off the line now to find out about flights from Inverness. But please do what I ask immediately. This could be very important. Whatever happens, I'll see you tomorrow.
Yes, they took him in early this morning. They've been doing various tests ever since.
Still no diagnosis?
No, not yet.
How does he seem to you?
Much the same.
Still disinterested?
Yes.
Try not to worry.
Oh, I try, but it's not easy. Is there anything you think you can do?
I'm afraid it's not possible for you to see him.
I've come a very long way.
I'm sorry, but...
I think I may be able to help him, or at least I had hoped.
I don't quite understand.
It's very important that I see him. Please believe me.
I don't see how I can make any exception.
There are matters concerned with this which I can't explain to you at the moment because there isn't time. I can only appeal to you to allow me to see him and try to speak to him.
Well, the regulations...
It so happens that I'm his only male relative. Perhaps you'll accept that as a reason for making a special exception. There are better reasons, but they are truly very difficult to explain.
Very well. I shouldn't allow this, but you may have a few moments.
The room was full of sunlight and was very quiet. Bill lay quite flat, with only one pillow. A saline drip stood beside his bed, the red rubber tube curving in behind the folded sheet to his outstretched arm. His face was shrunken, white and drawn, almost beyond recognition. But his eyes were open, his gaze wandering without purpose over the ceiling. It was almost as if he were blind. Then he spoke, unhurriedly, the words so quiet that I had to bend my head to hear them. And even then they made little sense.
This... It's a fellow who sounds like you. Chap I used to know. Very decent chap. But that was before the headache.
It is Hugh.
It's very funny. It's very, very funny. God almighty, my head, my head. Please take away my head.
I sat back in my chair, suddenly again aware of the hopelessness of it all, my own impotence, seeing in his poor, pain-distorted features the imminence of death. And it was then, in making the empty-handed gesture of hopelessness, that my fingers touched the thing that lay on the coverlet. I didn't recognize it at once. My fingers played with it, rolling it around, until the wave of pain had passed and he lay limp and silent. Then I looked at it. Even then it didn't dawn on me. The windows were open and there were trees below. It didn't seem strange that I should hold a seed.
Then suddenly, an enlightenment so physically apprehended that it brought me to my feet, I understood. In the palm of my hand, stirring slightly in the breeze from the window, lay something I had seen just twice before. I held a winged seed of the white-barked mahogany tree. I knew where I had to go, and I knew what I had to do. It was a long journey, and I was by no means certain that I'd succeed when I got there. But now, at last, I did have the glimmering of a kind of knowledge of what was happening, and some hope of being able to control it. The place I was making for was, of course, Mackay's manse. I can't remember now how long that return journey took. But when I arrived, it was nighttime, and I had to search for a few moments around the back of the house to find a way in. As I climbed the stair, I had no way of knowing yet whether he was at home. But then I saw light beneath one of the doors and heard the faint crackling of a fire from inside the room. I'd been well prepared in my mind, but still not well enough for that room. A monstrous fire heaped high in the grate had made it tropical in temperature, and the flame threw yellow light at me from gilded images, from the bright burnished weapons on the wall, from the dull metal of the iron claws which hung on the great leopard skin above the fire itself. The room was full of light, and of hot, rich color, of crimson damasks and gold brocades, of dull black velvet and the sheen of ebony, of glistening ivory and the color chaos of a score of rugs. In the very heart of this barbaric splendor stood the man I had come for, dressed in his accustomed black, and with a stiff band of white around his throat.
You are a very silent visitor. I take it you have some purpose here.
I have.
You may sit down, but say what you have to say and go. I dislike receiving visitors in this room.
That doesn't surprise me.
I find it intimidates them.
I assure you, not in the slightest. You may have heard that my cousin, whom you met, is ill. And I think you may know that he has intended to die.
You have a strange way of putting it. How is one intended to die?
I could have better said, perhaps, that I know you intend him to die.
If you know, who am I to deny it? And I could perhaps tell you more. I could tell you that he is intended to die tonight. And that there is nothing you can do about it.
Do you remember a man called Boyd? John Boyd?
No.
But you do, I'm sure, remember the people of the Orangi. You worked out a technique for the transmutation of souls. Do you remember that?
Who was this man, Boyd?
You found him sitting in your hut the night he discovered that you were a member of the Leopard Society, to which I see you still belong.
You're very well informed.
I told you I was. I didn't know about this room, of course.
You know too much.
Enough. Do you see this? I found it this morning on a hospital bed in London. It's a seed, as you well know, from the tree which you seem to have found most useful in your diabolical work. Tonight, I take it, you mean another soul to change.
While I live, there is no power on earth or in hell that can stop it.
That may be true while you live. We struck together. The little knife which brushed my neck buried itself in the cushion at my back. My own blow met his chin, lifting him clear of the floor, and as he dropped, his skull cracked on the edge of the marble mantelpiece. I heard it crack and stepped clear as his body slumped inwards on the fire, scattering the burning coals across the floor, flinging embers on the chair I'd just left. I had a last vision of his head lying in the fire's heart, the hair already gone. And then I was on the dark stairs, running, bounding out into the cold, blessed purity of the night air. In the window where the light had been, there was a faint, ruddy glow. And in my nostrils was a smell which I remember to this day yet. The smell of burning flesh. 10 minutes later, I was slumped in my armchair, surrounded by waves of exhaustion. Suddenly, Maggie burst in.
It's the man! door.
Where's the minister?
He was there this evening in the house.
May God have mercy on his soul. Men fought the fire, of course, but it was useless. I watched with the others until my lungs were full of smoke and my skin parched by the heat. Then again I went home. The phone rang about 11. Sheila? Sheila, is it you?
Yes, but how did you know?
I helped. How is he?
Bill? That's what I wanted to say. He's better, much better. It's wonderful. And they don't know why. He just started getting better about an hour ago, all of a sudden. Are you there, Hugh? I still can't believe it. I just left him and he knew me. Oh, he was back to himself again and he was asking for you. Hugh?
Thank the Lord for that.
But why did you have to go, Hugh?
I can't tell you. I will someday, but I can't just now. It's not important, Sheila. Not now that Bill's getting better. There's a lot I have to tell you, but not now. Now go and get some rest.
I doubt if I could sleep.
Try. And dream sweet dreams. Good night, Sheila. I stood with my hand on the phone, wondering. I could still see in my mind's eye the manse tumbling in flames. I was aware of no sense of guilt. What mattered was their happiness. Their happiness and nothing else. And I couldn't possibly have told her then that her father was dead.
The Devil's Minister, which was recorded, was adapted by John Wilson from the novel by Alistair Mayer. Hugh Collins was played by Hamilton Dyce and the Reverend Matthew Mackay by Bryden Murdoch. The rest of the cast was Dougal, Richard Finlay, Boyd, John Badley, McCallum, Walter Carr, Mrs. Cameron, Maud Risden, Cameron, Clem Ashby, Jean McKenzie, Sheila Latimer, Maggie, Madeline Christie, Jimison, David Stewart, Sheila, June Andrews, Bill, David Valla, Dr. Morrison, John Young, and the hospital sister, Helena Gloag.